On this Fortnite's episode of Nerd and Tie, Squirrel Girl is finally going to be getting her own comic series. The DC Carnival of Sadness has an official schedule, and Wonder Woman is on it. Iron Man is now going to be in Captain America 3. The IT Crowd is getting a second American remake. I went to Anime Fusion this weekend, and we talk about Anime News Network's Theron Martin's disgusting views on things like Valvrave the Liberator. And welcome to this Fortnite's episode of Nerd and Tie, the only podcast on the internet with a dress code. I am one of your hosts, Firsters, and with me this Fortnite, as always, is the ever-present Trey Dorn.
Hello, everybody.
And the always creeping outside your bedroom window, Nick Azumi.
Don't wear those socks. They're crappy.
But how are you guys doing this Fortnite?
Pretty good. Tired, mostly.
Yeah, I just had a road trip to Chicago for no reason.
See, I need to take one of those. I spent this weekend at Anime Fusion, which we're going to talk about later. And a good friend of mine, Thomas Sinclair, Born to Wrestle. He's the Vanguard Wrestling Alliance All-Star champion. And he does a lot of open mics in Chicago. And he said, Fur, you need to travel down to Chicago some week and we can hit a bunch of open mics. So that's something I've got to do.
So this is completely unrelated to anything, but so you know how 2 weeks ago AwesomeCon Indianapolis happened?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know how they were pitching that 20,000 people were going to show up?
How many did they get?
2,000.
2,000?
They were just off by a factor of 10.
Does that say? I was really hoping it'd be like a dozen, maybe, you know.
That's
take.
So, yeah, no, it's we're not going to talk about AwesomeCon this episode, but... Okay, so the 2,000 number is not a hard number. I got that from a friend of mine who was there who was estimating. So maybe it was like 7,000 and it was just a really big space that was empty. But, you know.
You never know.
I've been to cons like that and it sucks.
Yeah.
I don't know that we have official numbers from them yet or if we're going to, but if we do... We will pass that along to you, our listeners. But no, we've got a lot to talk about this Fortnite. There's been a lot going on these last couple of weeks that we've not been with you, but now we are, so we're going to talk about them. Of course, something that I'm excited about, and on day one, as soon as this comes out, I'm going to be there at my local comic store, which just moved recently and combined with the local gaming store, which is pretty cool.
Really?
But yeah.
Which comic book store?
Claremont Comics and Fountain of Youth basically merged.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's very cool.
Now they are the Claremont of Youth, unlimited in power.
See, last time I lived in Eau Claire, I think Eau Claire Comics was still around.
Yeah, it's not there anymore.
That's not there anymore.
Claremont is the only comic store in Eau Claire.
That guy was.
Other than the few that Fountain of Youth had gotten. But no, it's been announced that Squirrel Girl is getting her own series, series. 23 years later after her debut, she is now a headlining hero.
Oh my God.
Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, being written by Ryan North of Adventure Time and Erica Henderson from Quantum and Woody, are going to be taking the lead on Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, which is going to be debuting come January.
I'm excited.
Oh, I can't wait. I love Squirrel Girl. And the fact that now, like, Marvel is going to be playing her up and actually making her a... Because she's beaten just about every major villain, I think, in the Marvel Universe.
She's the most powerful hero in the Marvel Universe.
But it's going to be following her as she goes off to college.
The other interesting thing to know...
quitting as she's going to no longer be a nanny and has decided to finally go to school.
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
And this is something interesting to note. Her title, Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, marks the first time that this is a new adjective being used by Marvel Comics, basically making her different than her uncanny and amazing colleagues.
Or spectacular.
Or astonishing. Spectacular.
Or invincible.
Or astonishing. Yeah, so unbeatable. I'm calling it right now, folks. 2015 is going to be the year of Squirrel Girl because she's getting her own series, her own comic series, and I would bet money that she's going to be showing up at least somehow on screen in the Defenders series that is going to be coming out on Netflix next year, either between the Jessica Jones series, the Luke Cage series, or the actual Defenders series.
Or the shockingly ninja-like Daredevil series. Oh, oops.
But no, Squirrel Girl is going to have a good 2015.
Yay.
Which I think we need.
I'm all for that.
Yeah. I'm definitely all for that. It's the Squirrel Girl is a character who is a nice breath of lighthearted fun in kind of an otherwise... I guess Marvel's better about not being dark and depressing all the time than, you know, say, other companies. But, like, Squirrel Girl is, like, pure, like, has been pure Silver Age fun originally, and now, like, getting kind of a lighthearted title on her own is I think it speaks well for more female characters in lead roles in comic books, and this actually looks like a title I'd like to pick up.
Yeah, I should probably pick this one up, too. It sounds fun.
My list keeps growing. It's like, I gotta pick that up. I gotta pick up the new Secret Six. I think it comes out in December. Gail Simone's got another one called Clean Room coming out, which looks for through Vertigo, which is...
Which, I mean, since she's terrifying. A fan of the show, we're probably going to get an advanced copy of, right?
Oh, of course.
Right, yeah.
Like always.
No.
See, I'm looking at a couple of the variant covers of Unbeatable Squirrel Girl number one, and my favorite is by Art Adams. He's an artist, and it shows the titular character standing over the defeated bodies of Galactus. Let's see who else is on this pile. Doctor Doom is there. I see Ultron in a smoking heap. Magneto is laying there. Red Skull looks terrified as he wields a sword. I mean, like, and Squirrel Girl is just standing there, like, yeah, I beat all these guys. She's got the victory pose over Thanos.
Oh my god. This sounds awesome.
Yay.
No, this is going to be a fun series.
Yeah, I'm all in.
It's good to be looking forward to a series that's going to be like generally fun and upbeat and something that, like, honestly, I will probably check out and not have any problem with this one with letting my 5-year-old daughter read this. Seems like something she might like.
Well, that's good.
Yeah,
that is really good.
I'm a big fan of comics being kid accessible and lighthearted and fun and just, you know, yeah. Are you guys the, you know, big fans of fun things and happiness?
I am.
Comic book happiness. Age of Ultron, so yes.
Well, tough, because it's time for us to travel to the DC Carnival of Sadness. I love that we're doing that as a jingle. So in the Warner Brothers shareholders call on Monday, they actually spelled out the entire future kind of for the DC movies. And importantly, and this is kind of cool, is that one of those films notably is finally a Wonder Woman film.
Yeah, yay. Ish, kind of.
Yeah, we don't know if Gal Gadot, waiting for... Anyways, we don't know if she's actually any good yet, because we haven't actually, like, seen her in anything. I mean, I hope she's great, and so this will be a great film. But it is about time that they finally gave Wonder Woman a movie after how many decades, where the Linda Carter version is the only on-screen version we've ever had, although the Linda Carter version is getting a digital-only comic book.
There was a TV movie before the Linda Carter version, but it looked...
That was a pilot that never got aired. And never should be spoken of, ever.
Well, no, I wasn't talking about the recent pilot. I'm talking about, like...
No, I'm talking about the 1960s pilot.
Okay, good. Like, we're talking about the same thing. I found it in a bargain DVD catalog. Awful. I didn't buy it, by the way. But,
it's really bad.
How bad is it?
It's so bad. It's really bad. No.
No, I believe you.
The full schedule, by the way, breaks down to this. In 2016, we're going to get Batman versus Superman: Dawn of Justice,
which is filming just down the street from where Arkham Eyes was this week. Apparently. I hear.
Yeah. Right in the same general vicinity. He could have probably touched Henry Cavill's, like,
he could have punched Zack Snyder for us. So that's directed by Zack Snyder. And then in 2016, we're going to get Suicide Squad,
Yay!
That came out of nowhere, if you ask me. Yeah, I was kind of surprised by that.
I was shocked. We were all expecting Shazam to come quick, but that's going to be directed by David Ayer. And then in 2017, we're going to get Wonder Woman, and then we're also going to get Justice League Part 1, directed by Zack Snyder.
Sorry.
So the two films in 2017 we're going to get are Wonder Woman and then Justice League Part 1, which I hope gets a better title than that. But knowing them, it's going to be like Justice League Dawn of Versus of America.
Justice League Part 1, Donner of Justice.
And then in 2018, we're going to get The Flash starring Ezra Miller, which in no way will confuse people.
There's a lot of crossover of characters from the Arrowverse that I'm certain won't be played by the actors from the Arrowverse.
Well, no, it won't, because it's going to be played by Ezra Miller in The Flash.
Well, Arrow also had their own Suicide Squad, so
yeah
we're not going to have that.
But I'm like, why are we making, like, I understand, like, maybe including The Flash. The Flash is one of the characters you can, like, skip having in the Justice League.
Yeah, you really can. He's a...
I'm offended by that.
And here's the thing. So maybe it's just wishful thinking that The Flash is going to make it till 2018. That, you know, it's going to see, like, a season 3 and 4. I'm just crossing my fingers.
I think the first couple episodes have been really strong of The Flash.
Oh, I've really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed it. That doesn't mean that, you know, season 2 won't be awful.
That's true.
So that's in 2018. Also in 2018, we're going to see Aquaman starring Jason Momoa, which I am genuinely excited about.
Should be
Same.
Good.
Jason Momoa, I'm actually really phenomenal. Excited for that movie.
And then Shazam will finally come in 2019.
Why did they cast? Okay, never mind.
Yeah,
I'm asking logical questions about DC.
Don't ask. This is Warner Brothers. And then following Shazam will be Justice League Part 2, directed by Zack Snyder, also in 2019, which I'm referring
to as Justice League, Donner of Justice,
the second versus of coming Apocalypse, Doom, Secret Wars, just to screw with you.
I am kind of happy that there aren't a bunch of Batman movies on this list. I do want to say that.
Like, you know what actually you'll notice is that there are no Batman movies.
Yeah, there are no Batman movies.
All the Batman
on
appearances are going to be in the Justice League films.
Oh, wait, hold on. There's an article that was just published 3 days ago as a follow-up. Sorry, Trey, from Screen Rant, the same site that I'm looking at. Batman and Superman will get new standalone movies before 2020.
Okay.
God damn
well,
it.
Well, that's... Yep. That may be very true. That's not on the schedule that they announced, though. In 2020, then, we're going to get Cyborg, starring Ray Fisher, and also Green Lantern.
Is it long enough that you forgot about Ryan Reynolds yet?
That's what I'm hoping!
I know what you mean.
Green Lantern, I just hate Hal Jordan, like, generally. So,
yeah.
I'm like... Oh, the Green Lantern movie with Ryan Reynolds sucked. I'm like, yeah, because you made a Hal Jordan movie. Boom goes the dynamite.
No, I agree. I don't think Hal Jordan is that interesting of a character. And, you know, maybe they'll learn. Maybe they'll use a better one. I'm still just weirded out by, I don't even want to diss on this entire schedule. I still think Suicide Squad is a really weird movie to have so early in here.
Yeah.
That came out of nowhere, and I'm not really sure what they're gonna, because they're not gonna have anything to establish it with, really.
Well, here's I'm wondering if part of it was the last animated movie that they put out, and I know I'm the only person who's addicted to these animated video movies.
I'm sure Arkhamize is too.
That's good. Well, he is, I think. Yeah. But anyway, their most recent animated movie was a Suicide Squad movie. They called it a Batman movie, but it was Batman Assault on Arkham, but the main character was Deadshot. Batman mostly appears in cameos, and it was entirely about the Suicide Squad. So, maybe that straight-to-video movie did so well they wanted to try doing that live action, but I don't know. That's really strange.
Yeah. You know, I think it might just have to do with wanting to, you know, with the success of like Guardians of the Galaxy, like trying to introduce an obscure property early on.
Okay, like, yeah.
To see how well that can be successful, because that might alter their roadmap if Suicide Squad blows up.
Yeah, I guess that is kind of like, as in terms of outlaws who you kind of who you want to cheer for. That is a good example for DC Universe. Okay.
And so, but and it's like dipping a toe in obscure characters, you know, where a lot of other characters, like a lot of other, like, you know, Aquaman is, you know, even if people don't read the comics, they've heard of Aquaman and the Flash, and, you know, Cyborg's a little more obscure, I'll give you that, but, you know, but he was part of the Teen Titans cartoon, so it's like,
but
all
people
these other
don't know Deadshot and Captain Boomerang, etc.
Right.
Yeah.
So it. I think it's them dipping their toe in the water, where if it takes off, you'll probably see more obscure characters get introduced, and if it doesn't take off, they won't do as much in that regard. But yeah, I think it's good that DC's dipping their toe in the water. I mean, yeah. And trying the more obscure characters and see if it'll work. I think with the Marvel Cinematic Universe, was more established when they tried this with Guardians of the Galaxy, so it's kind of a, you know, I think it's a riskier proposition because DC hasn't necessarily built out their brand as much. You know, we've had a, you know, random Batman films and stuff, and hopefully I'm not repeating stuff because I didn't rewind super far back when I had to start recording again. But anyways, yeah, pants. Everyone has to wear them.
Except for Deadshot. Oh. Deadshot's such a major character on Arrow right now. That's another thing that has me all. I know I keep talking about the Arrowverse, but the Arrowverse works, and I really hope they don't screw that over.
Well, I don't think it'll hurt. Okay, so introducing characters like that who are side characters in the TV series, mm-hmm. I think is fine. I think that, I mean, it's risky, but like I think people can handle that continuity split. It's when the headliner, like with the Flash, headliner.
Flash is the one I'm most worried about because, I mean, like, if we go back, like, DC has a history of canceling one project if another project featuring the same character is more popular. That's why Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman, went on for, like, 5 seasons and why Superboy got canceled. You know, it's...
Yeah, absolutely. And Superboy went through 2 different Superboys.
Well, yeah, I never said it was a great show. I watched it.
I was a
neither
kid.
Was Lois and Clark, though. So.
So I will say, like, the first season of Lois and Clark is great for something produced in the 90s.
I was really confused by the title when I was a child because I'd been learning about Lois and Clark like right around that time.
And
that
you couldn't handle a pun?
No, my little brain couldn't do it.
You were unprepared for punnage in television show titles.
Yeah,
you poor bastard.
Fur turned out hoping for this historical drama.
He wanted to see a version of the historical drama where they rule third, you know, they gender flipped one of the two, so a tense romance would occur as they explored Louisiana territory.
Well, there was a really great Robot Chicken sketch with that where it's the two the lead actor and actress from that show. I can't remember who was off the top
Dean
of my head.
And Terry Hatcher.
Yeah. Where it's them dressed up in like pioneer, like explorer gear, and they stop halfway through the sketch and they're like, "We're just hoping that people get the joke and remember this show. Why are we doing this sketch?"
Yep, that's the whole joke. That was
Seth Green is a vengeful god.
He's a god now?
Well, in the realm of Robot Chicken, technically.
Okay. Okay, I'll accept that.
For characters in Robot Chicken, he is.
Okay,
all
I can
of this makes sense in the end.
So, but yeah, so
DC, my only friend, the end.
I'm really curious. Actually, one other thing I want to talk about. I like Cyborg probably about as much as the next person, but I don't remember him ever carrying his own comic, let alone a movie.
I'm sure he has.
I don't know.
You know what? You know what'll help right now? The amazing Google.
Feels like a don't get me wrong. I'm glad about that. I also think it's interesting that DC has announced a Wonder Woman movie. Like, they've announced Wonder a headliner Woman? Female superhero movie before Marvel did, but...
Yeah, Cyborg's had his own comic.
Oh, okay.
Or at least a one-shot, or a miniseries. He had a four-issue miniseries. That I know.
And granted, it doesn't
help DC Wiki.
New 52 kind of boringed up his backstory a bit, so... Yeah. Which they did with a lot of characters.
He had a six-issue... Okay, so he had a one-shot back in the day, and then he had a six-issue special in 2008.
Okay.
But I don't think he's ever had an ongoing, ever.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, he's, you know, always, he's been heavily featured in, like, there was a Teen Titans, like, where they did, like, a four-issue thing, each featuring a different Titan, and he had, that was his one-shot, and then he had a six-issue miniseries in 2008. But that's it. That's the extent of his stuff.
I just hope there's enough to draw from there. I don't know.
Yeah.
There'll be plenty. They'll come up with something, because... We don't even really know what storyline this is going to be following within the DC universe, or
yeah,
if it's going
to
be
sticking to New 52 so much. I mean, even
like Wonder Woman's going to get the New 52 origin because of stupid.
We'll see what happens.
And Cyborg's origin in New 52 is kind of just, I don't know. I'm not a super big fan.
Just remember, the Greek gods being real is supposed to be more believable than magic clay. And I'm saying that in seriousness, like the magic clay is literally just as... Okay, so here's what I don't get about the Greeks. Mount Olympus was a physical place that they could just walk to. And they said their gods were up there, but no one bothered climbing the damn thing to check.
Well, let's be honest, Trey.
Edith Hamilton talks about that, her mythology, and she says, like, if you look at, like, the Greek text, it's never entirely clear in the original Greek if they mean the physical location or a metaphysical version of the physical location. It's
plus, let's be honest, if I was told that if I went to the top of that mountain would be a bunch of things that if looking at them could literally kill me, I'd probably be like, oh, I'm not gonna do that.
That's true, too. If you look at a Greek god in their true physical form, you explode.
Yeah. So I think that's what they had going for them, was a fear thing.
I don't think that's true.
The exploding
I read a lot
part,
of mythology as a kid, and I know a lot. There are lots of humans who directly interacted with Greek gods.
Not in their real form.
Yeah, but like in their true
Persephone
form.
Persephone freaking banged Hades.
Well,
I guess she was the daughter of Demeter, who was a goddess, so I guess that actually doesn't work.
Yeah, that was actually how one of the children who factored into the whole Golden Fleece legend was born, was Zeus was dumb, and he swore by the river Styx, and if a god swears by the river Styx, then they can't freaking break their whatever they swore. And she's like, I want to see you in your true form. And he's like, she's. And then she exploded, but she had an unborn kid, so he saved the kid. Like, it happens. I will get Edith Hamilton.
But... I bet everybody out there had no idea they were going to get a lesson in Greek mythology tonight.
But on Xena, they look straight at the Greek gods all the time.
I don't know. The Greek... Also, Greek mythology isn't super, like, consistent about things.
Well, that's why I think Mount Olympus was referred to as a literal place only because most people didn't go, like, 20 miles away from where they lived in their entire lives.
That's because there were bandits and things that only Theseus
would
think
of. Right, no, but, like, so if you see that mountain 15 miles away, like, on the horizon, you might never go there because... It'd be really stupid to go there because you'd die.
Exactly.
But there were guys who lived near that mountain who could have gone up and checked, who didn't. It'd be really awkward to be an atheist in ancient Greece.
They actually, there were satirists who made fun of atheists in ancient Greece. There's some, we actually have some surviving plays making fun of them, and they one of them was like, refers to, if the gods didn't create us, what did? Some giant fart? Fart. That was more or less what they said. I wish I was making this up.
So Greek humor hasn't really evolved, is what
No, not at all. Not in the slightest.
As we have now offended all Greek listeners to Nerd and Tie. I apologize.
I mostly apologize. And by mostly, I mean I entirely apologize. Except the fourth thing happened.
Everything I know about Greece came from playing Battle of Olympus as a kid. That's not true. But that's why I do know a lot of the names of cities.
Mine's from Civilization, honestly.
I read Edith Hamilton Mythology 2 months ago. I don't know why I read that, but I read the whole book. Even the appendices.
Your life has really gone wrong, hasn't it? We were talking about the DC films. I want to point out, this is part of our DC movie discussion. Oh my god.
Hey, look, I'm sad. The Carnival of Sadness makes me sad. I had to think about something happy.
Well, then get us out of it.
Okay, let's go somewhere. Oh, this isn't happy. Let's go over to Marvel.
I disagree. It's happy.
I think it's very good.
I think it's good. I think you're just interpreting it wrong.
It's awesome, but it's... okay, anyway. So, we had a recent, basically, reveal that Robert Downey Jr. is signing on for Captain America 3. Ooh.
Yay.
And there's a lot of speculation about that. A lot of people think that this means that if not Captain America 3, then maybe a future Avengers film might get a little uncivil, so to speak.
I disagree.
You don't think so, Trey?
Yeah, okay, so why don't we explain first what you're saying?
Okay, well, yeah,
what,
so...
What people are inferring.
A lot of people are kind of expecting this to be a Civil War, a setup for the Civil War storyline. This was a storyline for those who missed out. It was a big event comic Marvel did, in my opinion, one of their last event comics that wasn't terrible, wherein the government tries enacting a superhero registration act, and Iron Man is all for it, and Captain America is completely against it. There's a big war between the superheroes. There was some less than subtle prodding at the Patriot Act. And it was, it eventually, all came down to Captain America and Iron Man punching the crap out of each other. So.
Yeah.
And it also is worth noting that several elements from Civil War number one were worked into Captain America, the Winter Soldier film, which is a little unnerving in that regard.
Well, yeah.
Like. But a lot of those scenes were taken straight out of Civil War number one, which kind of surprised me and some other people, but yeah.
But here's why I'm like, I think people are calling this too early. Because, first off, I mean, if you go to the Civil War storyline, Iron Man being pro-registration, Captain America being anti-registration, if you look at the story of, say, Avengers 2 that we believe is going to happen with Age of Ultron, Tony Stark's the one who fucks everything up.
Right.
So I don't see Tony Stark being the one who, you know, his reliance on the, his lack of reliance on the heroes themselves is what causes the problem. So that's why I'm like, I'm a little kind of.
Yeah, but
I don't
then,
necessarily see the lead. I don't see the lead in necessarily for Civil War is what I'm saying. Well, and
I mean, Trey, then they could very easily say like, okay, so Tony Stark realized like, okay, I guess we do need the heroes. We can't rely on artificial intelligence to do this for us. But while we're at it, why don't we make sure we know exactly who it is that has the powers? That could be your lead in right there.
I guess. I feel like it would be a little out of left field for the... I mean, again, we don't know what's going to happen in the other films in the Marvel Cinematic Universe between now and Cap 3. So it's hard to necessarily call. But I'm just a little bit like, I think people want to figure out where they're going ahead of time by looking at the comics as clues and trying to find pre-existing maps. But I think that it's far too early without any concrete information. Because let's remember, the only concrete information we have is that Robert Downey Jr. is going to appear in the third Captain America movie. There's been no plot leak, really. This has all just been rampant speculation. And we're big fans of rampant speculation here at Nerd and Tie, folks. But I think that there's way too much of a history of characters interacting with each other in the Marvel Cinematic Universe that... I don't know.
It'll depend on how big his part is. I don't know. I don't. Cap and Tony, we've established from day one, from like where we've had them on screen together, they do not get along very well. And I don't know.
Well, I think it'll really depend on how Age of Ultron goes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's gonna be awesome. I think. I hope.
No, I'm stupid excited for Age of Ultron, but that's because there's a really good cast and an excellent writer-director team and, you know, a history of things working.
Yeah.
And Zack Snyder's not involved. And Frank Miller's not involved. And, okay, sorry.
Hey, speaking of things that work and potentially things that don't work or haven't worked in the past.
Oh, God. Take it away, Trey.
Oh, okay. I have to get the article back up. So, many of you are familiar with the British sitcom The It Crowd, or The IT Crowd. There's actually no official pronunciation for the name of the show. It's supposed to be pronounced both, which, you know, tells the story of Roy and Moss in the basement of a large multinational corporation who are the IT guys, who get a new manager, Jen, who has lied on her resume and really, in actuality, knows nothing about computers. And Chris O'Dowd, Richard Ayoade, A-Y-O-A-D-E, I can never pronounce his last name, starred in it. It's a really great show. It ran four seasons and a special, and it kind of launched careers, especially for Chris O'Dowd.
That's also a really long run for a British show.
Well, and you gotta think the actress who played Jen was also doing Doc Martin at the same time.
Oh.
And back in 2007, we know that they tried to actually do like an American remake starring Joel McHale in the Chris O'Dowd Roy part, and then Richard Ayoade just replayed Moss again, because you can find the pilot on YouTube, and they literally just took the script of the first episode of the It Crowd and put the new actors in it. So thank God they kept. The only reason why that episode is watchable is because Richard Ayoade is playing Moss, and there is literally no change in his performance. But that was originally supposed to come on as a mid-season replacement in the winter of 2007, like January 2007. But due to a regime change at NBC, it never happened. Like, it got pulled from the schedules before they started shooting the rest of the season. And it, so, which is really good, because it was the only thing I've ever watched in which Joel McHale was bad.
Really?
It freed him up to do Community a couple of years later. And for Richard Ayoade to direct an episode of Community. Because he directed the My Dinner with Andre episode.
I love that one.
Yeah. That kind of died, and we all thought like it had, you know, the idea of an American It Crowd had gone the way of the dinosaur. But guess what? We're going to get another one, because Bill Lawrence is dragging the series back to NBC.
Oh, boy.
Alongside with Community alums, because everything comes back to Community alums Neil Goldman and Garrett Donovan. Although I think both of them worked on Scrubs before they worked on Community, so it kind of makes sense that they'd be working with Bill Lawrence. And they're doing it as a put pilot for NBC. and I mean... there's hope that they could make it work. It's going to be a multi-camera sitcom still, so it's going to be still shot the way that they did the original, as opposed to like Community and Scrubs, which are single camera comedies. And if you don't know what the differences are, Community and Scrubs are single camera comedies, which are shot like dramas but still written as sitcoms. Where a two camera comedy is when you're looking at something like, unfortunately, anything by Chuck Lorre. but for a good two camera comedy, most of the quality two camera comedies are like from the 90s, because most of the good comedies moved to single camera. So if you go back to like Frasier. Oh, actually, no. How I Met Your Mother was a two camera comedy. So that was. But yeah,
that was mostly good.
Hopefully they will adapt it and change it enough. But here's the thing. This is a put pilot, which means that the network has agreed to air this. And if they don't air it, they have to pay substantial penalties to the studio, Warner Brothers, for producing it. So there, with a put pilot, there is an almost 100% guarantee it's going to be on the air. Now, the Brian Fuller Munsters remake had its pilot air without a series being ordered, so it doesn't mean that the show's actually going to like still be a show, but it means that in all likelihood, this episode is going to air on American TV no matter what. So,
oh boy, I guess.
Yeah.
Sometimes I feel like...
Bring it on.
You've mentioned the American Rake several times in previous Nerd and Tie episodes, but I feel like I should watch the original just to get a feel for this.
The original is very good.
The original show or the original remake?
The original show, not the remake.
Oh, no, the Incredible. Every time you mention it, watch that. It's awesome.
Okay.
It's phenomenal. But the thing that's got me hopeful is that this is Bill Lawrence doing this. And, yeah. And Bill Lawrence has a very, very good track record. His work with Phil Lord on pretty much any of like the really great comedies that have come out in theaters. I mean, like the Lego Movie was incredible. Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs was really good. He had a hand in one of my favorite animated shows of all time, Clone High.
That's true. Clone High is awesome.
I still haven't watched that. I need to see that.
And so I think that if anybody could take a show like the It Crowd and adapt it for American television in a way that it's still going to be able to maintain its original sort of feel to it, it's going to be Bill Lawrence. So I really don't think we have anything to worry about on that front.
Yeah, I will say that you look at the creative teams between some Community and Scrubs. Community and Scrubs are two of the best sitcoms to come out of American television in a long-ass time. You know, I mean, there are other good ones, too. I don't want to say that these are the only good shows that have ever happened, but, there's a good team. I'm just hoping what they do is that they're smart enough to do what happened with The Office, where the first season of The Office is just not that good because they pretty much tried to recapture the feel of the British show, where starting with the second season, they reworked it to kind of be its own thing while still working off the – that's what I hope happens, that they find the spirit of the show but – you know, don't try to like just do a literal remake of it. They build something new off of it.
Usually that's the only way to really make a remake work. I mean,
yeah. And that's why we, you know, and that's why The Office worked while the original remake of The It Crowd was terrible.
It was not very good.
No. Again, it's... Well, you know what the problem is? That Joel McHale is just not convincing as a schlub. that's really what it is. He can't sell Roy.
Mm.
He's too sharp for Roy.
Yeah.
I can see that.
Oh, so let's talk of happier things for...
Yeah, let's do that. So, I this weekend, along with a few other folks, between Otaku Tonight Productions and X Geek Media, went to Anime Fusion in Bloomington, Minnesota this weekend at the Ramada across from the Mall of America, which is the, I believe, the official name of the hotel.
Is that the Thunderbird?
Yeah, it's the former Thunderbird, the okay. old Anime Detour Hotel.
Against the walls. Sorry.
And this was Anime Fusion's third year. I have been to Anime Fusion every year that it has gone on. The first year I went as a day trip with my daughter. Last year I went as a I'm not doing anything of any consequence at this convention. I'm having fun at this convention. I'm not doing any performing, anything like that. This year I went as a performer.
Ooh, fancy.
Performing in two Otaku Tonight panels, Match Game, and Whose Line Is Anime, and X-Seek Media's At Midnight style panel, run by the very, very funny Ryan Tidball, who I think pretty much nailed the hosting duties of what that show should be hosted as. But as it is a third year convention in Minnesota, which Minnesota cons typically do very well because, I mean, they're all located in large city, you know, in the large central part of the Twin Cities. I wasn't really sure what to expect because it's run differently than the Anime Twin Cities group, which runs Anime Detour, a few other events. The Anime Fusion, I believe, is run by, and forgive me if I'm wrong, someone can write to me and tell me that I'm wrong if I am. I believe it's run by Quad Cities Anime.
I have no idea.
I think that's the group that runs this one. And it was a lot of fun. I greatly enjoyed this convention this weekend. For me, it was more of a getting back to where I wanted to be state of mind. Last month and a half has been a little bit tough. So getting to go to a convention and seeing friends and stuff like that, I think is probably one of the greatest cures for any ailment that somebody has, emotionally, mentally speaking. it was a very well run convention. The programming went very, very smoothly. One thing that kind of weirded me out a little bit, it has its benefits and it has its downsides, were that between each panel there was a 30-minute space.
I hate Ooh. That.
While that was a good thing for all of our panels because all of the Otaku Tonight panels and the X-Geek panels require significant setup time, probably about 10 to 15 minutes that you normally wouldn't get if you had the 10-minute gap that most cons put in, or in some cases they don't even put in that gap and they run everything right up to the time and they expect you to do everything within that 50 minutes you get after setup. That also means that for every two panels that are run, you lose out on a third panel.
Well, it also means that as a you don't get people flowing into the next panel who might not have otherwise gone to a panel going, oh, this looks interesting, and sticking around. You lose those people entirely.
Exactly. And there really wasn't – there was a little bit of that. There was a little bit of people coming in and be like, oh, I can do other things for 20 minutes or whatever, and then leaving and then maybe not necessarily coming back. It was pretty cool because all of the panels that were at this convention, and I only went to a couple, but the ones that I stopped in and saw were very, very well run, thought out, rehearsed. The first panel that I walked into was a group of people dressed up as the Aquabats, hosting an Aquabat style pool party. It was awesome. I've never walked into a panel and walked out so happy in my life. It was a blast. So they chose all their panels very, very well, and it was just the 30-minute setup time that was a little bit off-putting. Now, the one thing that I can't say that I did like, the vendor room was a little bit it's a big vendor room, but I felt there was a lot of repetition in the vendor room. The one thing they were allowed to do this year that they hadn't been allowed to do in the last 2 years was they were actually able to sell food in the vendor room. Like Pocky and Ramune and snacks.
Oh, wow. They hadn't been able to sell that stuff before?
Nope. They worked it out with their hotel this year where they could. But that being said, like I can only like see by like the second kimono vendor or the third like t-shirt. You know, like there's one big t-shirt vendor, but I mean like there wasn't a lot of variety, I felt. Granted, I was only in the vendor room probably for a total of 10 minutes over the weekend. But just walking through and looking at stuff in the vendor room in the artist alley, nothing really jumped out at me to be like, oh, yeah, I should spend money on this like it has in years past. As far as the nightlife of the convention, I don't remember a whole lot of that. But I was actively participating in the nightlife of the convention, which is why I don't really remember much of it. the room parties were all very well run. The hotel has a rotunda type setup like the plaza here in Eau Claire does. And that's where they held all the room parties. So everything was all in a single strip. You could jump from one room party to one room party. They had a single badger outside the room party area, which I think was a good thing. Which I think you need. It stopped people from that weren't part of the convention from going in. And everything was really well set up. So for a third year convention, Anime Fusion was a lot of fun. It's one of those conventions where I feel like it's so separated from how groups like Detour and stuff run their convention, where it feels very systematic and almost mechanical. This one still felt like it had a little bit of life, its own sort of personality to it, which I think is important to have at a convention.
Cool.
10 out of I'll go 8 out of 10. I'm definitely going to be back next year. It's a lot of fun. So, yeah.
All right.
That's exciting.
I will say it was really interesting because at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, there were already cops escorting people out on 2 o'clock in the afternoon on Friday.
Good God.
And I turned to my friends and I'm like, my God, if I'm ever going to get a drunk and disorderly at a convention, it's going to be this one. they locked down on that. There was a No Brand Con-esque incident that required like 6 cops showing up. Those of you who know what I'm talking about are probably like, oh yes, I remember that night.
The SWAT team.
It happened.
If you are in a parking garage, which is shared by more than just your convention's hotel, but also just the local downtown, running around with realistic looking guns and, you know, in military garb, is a really good way to get a SWAT team called on you.
Snake.
Snake. I swear, it's like... Oh, the best part is that... Okay, so... And also, if the SWAT team's been called on cosplayers the night before, maybe you shouldn't go standing outside with your fake shotgun on the city street.
Never a good idea.
Oh, or the poor guy who that same year also got busted outside of the hotel he was staying at because he was staying at another hotel in town and just had a fake gun and, like, the cops got called on him, too. Oh, because he scared someone who was at the same hotel as him. This is...
This is why cosplay weapons are, at your own risk, I guess.
This is why I don't encourage realistic weapons with cosplay. I'm just like, if you want to do it, well, the problem is now, these days, you'd get mistaken for an open carry activist.
Aww.
And remember, folks, you can only get away with this stuff if you're white.
Yup. No, Anime Fusion was fun. I look forward to it next year. And, yeah.
Who knows? Maybe I'll actually make it next year.
I hope so, Nick. It was a good time. Saw a lot of people that our good friend Erica Flanagan was even there this year.
Flanagan.
Flanagan flew in from Denver or from Colorado to go to Fusion. So it was really really awesome to see them there.
I wish I could. You know, it's Fusion's one of those cons that started out like right after I left town.
Pretty much, wasn't it? Yeah, I think.
Yeah, and so it's like it would be like a 12-hour drive for me to go. And so it's just like not like doable. But I want to. You know, folks from Anime Fusion, if you're ever looking for a fantastic guest, Nerd and Ty is willing to make an appearance for minimal transport fees.
Absolutely. You really just need to pay for give us some badges and
gas in a hotel room.
Yeah,
maybe buy us a pizza, but I mean, like, that's if you really want to make us like extra happy.
Pizza tonight.
I just ate a pizza.
I could use some pizza tonight.
I ate some pizza rolls earlier tonight.
Mm-mm. Anyways,
am I the only one who remembers when they were called Gino's Pizza Rolls and not Totino's Pizza Rolls?
I know, because I'm not ancient.
I'm old.
I mean, I might turn 25 on Friday, but I'm not old yet.
What does that mean? I'm already 25.
I'm 34.
It means that both of you are old.
Hey, wait, it means you'll be in my demographic again.
Will I?
It's 18 to 24 and then 25 to 34.
Oh.
Welcome to the you're not a young person anymore.
Oh, don't remind me.
You're not going to be part of like the hip demographic. Now what's going to happen is songs from when you were in high school are going to be used to sell cars.
You know, I did have an ARP letter show up in my mailbox the other day, and I'm like, was this some kind of joke?
Oh, I get those too. I get
are you kidding me?
For like AARP open, I get stuff for the Medicare open enrollment period, formerly the annual, which is only irritating because I work in the like Medicare and retirement division of a health insurance company in real life. And so I'm like,
whoops.
No.
Don't want to deal with that.
Spammy scammers trying to use language to trick my customers. I'm angry and want to punch people.
Yeah, I see those a lot recently.
Well, it's because open enrollment just started.
Right.
For this year.
And speaking of,
because everyone wants to know about the Medicare open enrollment period.
Yeah, let's why this isn't part of our discussion.
The next part of our discussion is a little bit dark, though.
Yeah, it's going to get dark. Do we put a content warning on this?
Content warning. May discuss Anime News Network and bad things and Valvrave and everything wrong about Valvrave. Content warning. Possible sexual assault and rape to be discussed.
Yep. Yeah.
But so not of real people?
But not of real people.
If,
so I guess that's
not your thing, or if that causes some issues there, you know, feel free to like skip maybe the next like 7-8 minutes of this podcast.
I've come to realize Valvrave the Liberator is just going to follow me for the rest of my life.
That was the first episode of your show I ever watched.
I thought it would just be a mediocre and then suddenly terrible mecha series that I could review angrily on my channel and it would never be part of my life again. And I was apparently wrong. But this actually relates back to... So Valvrave, this recurring thing. Valvrave was this series that I got really angry with back last year because it was an anime series... Wherein the main character viciously rapes one of the other characters from the show on screen. Like, this just happened. Like, dear God. Like, I was really upset by this. And I started working on some reviews. And I looked at some other people's reviews. And I think it was around then that I started really noticing a guy who works at Anime News Network called Theron Martin. Now, I'd read Theron's name before, and some of you might have read an article I posted earlier this week about Theron Martin and how uncomfortable I am with a lot of the articles that he writes. But the first one that he did that really bothered me was his talk about Valvrave.
Yeah.
And in Theron's little article about Valvrave, he actually, the second paragraph of his discussion, he decided to discuss whether or not the rape scene in Valvrave was a rape scene. Well, and then spent the rest of the article calling the characters victim and perpetrator, and then later in the article calling it a rape scene. I was a little perturbed by this, because then the rest of that paragraph goes on to kind of defend, like, well, it the show focuses mostly on how bad the guy who raped her felt, and she doesn't even seem like she's that fazed by it. So clearly, this scene isn't problematic. Clearly, this scene isn't problematic. It's not like it was written by someone who just doesn't understand how rape works.
That was my head hitting my microphone repeatedly. People watching the live stream saw that.
I saved this article, and I kind of had forgotten about it until recently. A new series came out from the same studio that brought us Valvrave. Sunrise, who, by the way, used to be that studio that did Cowboy Bebop and Gundam. Now they just, they're the studio that does the mecha series or the graphic rape scene every year, I guess. A new series came out called Cross Angie or Cross Ange. I'm not sure what the pronunciation is. Yay. Which also had, it didn't even wait, unlike Valvrave. Its first episode ends with another graphic rape scene. Yay. Oh, God.
Oh, dear Lord.
And of course, and what really struck me about this series was that if you go to Anime News Network, and there's links in the article that I put up on the site, you'll notice that the only two things prevented this show from getting 1-star reviews from every critic who worked there. Either the people who said that it was too bad to even warrant a star, and Theron Martin, who actually gave it 3 stars. And again,
what?
Yes, I'm not
what?
Kidding. The guy, 3 out of 5. Now, the guy isn't, and I mean, the issue isn't so much that he's descending from the other people. It's, once again, he is completely dismissive of a rape scene. He actually, this time, went on to justify it by saying, well, you know, cavity searches are regular in prisons. Which horrified me, but not nearly as much as it horrified me with his other comments.
Ow, I actually hurt myself that time.
This is the one that really, really bothered me. The scene is important because it serves as karmic justice for how the character behaved earlier in the episode. Yeah. So anyway, what I'm getting at is I'm a big fan of Anime News Network. I go there for a lot of information. I mean, I get about half the jokes we write for Otaku Tonight.
They're one of the best English language anime news sites out there.
They're pretty much the best. Yeah. I'm even willing
to
say.
Where else are we gonna go? K-Drama Stars? That's if you want, you know, Anime News Network, the only place where the news isn't made up.
And it's just, it's horrifying to me that this guy has been working there for a pretty long time, too. And I go back, and I guess, I mean, you get into his Valvrave and his Cross Ange reviews were the ones that really stuck out to me, but I'm not even sure how much deeper this goes. It's worth mentioning this. I want to know why this guy is still working there and why.
I'm betting he's a part owner of the site.
Maybe.
I mean, because you got to remember, the websites are, websites like this, I mean, look at us.
Right.
YouTube, I can't fire you guys from Nerd and Tie. You co-own Nerd and Tie.
Pretty much. You're stuck with me now.
Hell, Fur named the damn show.
It's just so shocking because, I mean, like, all of his colleagues, all of them, don't seem to share his opinions, thankfully. Actually, just recently, Anime News Network, in their mailbag section, took a question about rape scenes in anime, and the expert, Hey Answer Man, went so far as to say, these rape scenes are a problem in anime, but that's mostly because Japan has a really horrifying outlook on rape.
Yeah.
That doesn't make it okay, though.
No, exactly. Which
is precisely what he said.
Media is a reflection of the culture.
Right. I'm just really horrified that, like, I guess that someone could just keep getting this stuff published. And I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying that there are things that shouldn't be covered in the arts or explored. But I'm saying the way you explore them is worth critiquing.
A little bit of self-awareness is important, you know?
Yeah.
And when you have guys like Theron Martin whose only concern with scenes like this, again, from the Cross Ange review, is this fan service going to get in the way of the story? I'm horrified.
Can we hit him with a car?
I don't want to threaten physical harm against someone, but dear God, I really am scared. Like, I'm shaken by the fact that this is mainstream nerd journalism, really. I mean, you cannot get more mainstream. Actual anime companies will put quotes from ANN on the back of their products. This is, it really creeps me out. I guess it's also worth noting that when Anime News Network did their best of 2013, Theron Martin was one of the two people asked about it, and Valfrave made his list twice. Albeit,
is it possible
one of them
that he's just like been hit on the head with a hammer really, really hard.
Admittedly, one of the two things he voted it for was biggest guilty pleasure, but I don't know.
I hate it so much.
I don't know. I that was one of those things that I noticed and it really irks me and I'm really uncomfortable with it.
Yeah.
Maybe
no,
it'd be worth contacting them directly. I don't know.
Write an angry email.
Tell Anime News Network that Theron Martin is a fucking moron and a jackass, and I apologize for swearing. Wow, I'm going to get us in so much trouble with iTunes.
Incredible.
Stitcher, please don't get mad at us. iTunes, don't get mad at us. Like they ever
listen to
Theron
Martin can have that effect on people, apparently, because, yeah, kind of horrifying. This is nerd journalism.
I think this is just kind of an indicator of the general state of parts of nerd culture that we don't like. I think that it's easy to forget exists when you're a guy, but obviously, like, I mean, take a look at the whole. I mean, I don't want to bring up Gamergate, the bullshit Gamergate shit, where you know, in video games journalism and in creators, women are getting harassed and people are claiming it's about journalism. Let's harass all the women. That whole fucking thing. Adam Baldwin can suck a brick. I'm really disappointed in Adam Baldwin, although I shouldn't be surprised at this point. Anyways, but like as we're seeing this, like the level of misogyny rife within the nerd community is way higher than I ever realized. Like these past 2 years have been kind of this revelation where women are coming forward and admitting like their treatments. So those of us who were not aware of this stuff, you know, didn't know this was happening in the culture.
I had no clue of this. And then suddenly, everything that's exploded.
And it's so clear that it's been there the whole time. It's just that we've been, you know, fortunate. We've been privileged enough not to have to deal with it. As, you know, again, this is a show, you know, of three white dudes.
Yeah, white dudes from Wisconsin. You know, we're barely. I don't know. It's really. This has been a really scary time for me, like reflecting on what this culture is and wishing that we were something better.
I've spent my adult life trying to build centers for nerd culture to flourish. It's with my work with starting a convention and working other conventions and doing all that. And so it's very disappointing when the people within the community don't live up to my hopes for them.
Right.
So here's my message to everyone listening, all five of you, actually, I think four of you. Anyways, if you are a misogynist douchebag, die in a fire or stop being a misogynist douchebag. Those are your two choices. I have the matches. Booyah.
Booyah. All right, we should get on a mailbag.
Mailbag!
There's all sorts of stuff in it this week.
So I think
there is.
I think you should do Gen's first.
Okay. This letter comes from Gen. Gen says, happy spoopy day. Hey, guys. So if you were to design a t-shirt for DC, what would you create? Also, what is your Halloween costume this year? I would make a t-shirt for DC that says, we hope this isn't a screw-up. With, like, a symbol of, like, the Superman and Batman logo on it.
training to be Wonder Woman's wife.
Yes. That'd be good.
I would put Black Manta with his neck stuck in one of those, like, you know, soda can things that fish get stuck in.
No, wait.
Black Manta. Actually, with Black Manta and Ocean Master, you know, and it would be really funny.
I changed my mind. I want my t-shirt to be Luther, and it just says, I'm Lexi and I know it.
A t-shirt of Stephanie Brown that says, spoiler alert.
I like that.
What are our Halloween costumes?
I'm going as Trey.
We can't wear the same thing.
Wow.
Because I'm going as Trey.
Can you be like a different era Trey? I was gonna be like circa 2005 Trey.
Oh man, you're gonna get a good wig then.
Yeah.
No, wait, long 2005. Hair. I had short hair in 2005.
Oh, there we go. I'm there. I've got this costume done.
You got the beard though?
I can make it happen. I can get there.
I had a goatee in 2005. Because 2005 was the brief short hair window before I grew it long again, before I cut it off permanently. Because, yeah, that's... Wait. 2005... I cut my hair and shaved my beard for about a 2-week period in 2005, so you can be that one easily.
No, it's gonna be like I'm really going deep in the Trey fandom here, really.
Well, if you want to go classic Trey, your best shot's like 2003, where you want to get the wig, the feathers, the massive amount of keys, the flannels, and the black trench coat. That's if you got to go real classic, you know. Again, and you got to get the feathers.
I don't think I've ever cosplayed any other real person. I've had several people cosplay me.
Well, I had someone, a friend of mine in 2003 who went as me for Halloween. So, yeah, no, I'm not actually going to. I'm not doing anything for Halloween this year. Because I live in a town where all my friends are miles and miles and miles away. What I really wish I was doing is I wish I was going to Anime Nebraska, but that's because I want to go to a convention more than anything, and I can't.
Raina's going to go work at that one. I'm going to be probably at home watching Fright Night. I don't know what I'm going to...
I'm going to be bartending Halloween, and I can probably dress up. But at the same time, I tend to get like covered in all kinds of alcohols with how quickly I have to be drink slinging. So I'm probably just going to be wearing regular clothes.
So you'd be a perfect Tony Stark.
I could be.
Get a little tap light, put it under your shirt.
I could do it. Maybe I'll have to.
Gotta make sure your facial hair is right.
Because I don't have much for, I don't know.
Maybe I'll be Tony Stark.
Technically, I guess I could, like, wear my normal clothes and then put on my Bobby Singer hat and pretend I'm...
I did find a red leather trench coat at Goodwill the other day, so I might just do a really basic Star-Lord and Blair Awesome Mix number one and just challenge kids to dance-offs.
Well, you know... Krista's putting together a My Immortal Tom Riddle costume for DaishoCon. She has the exact party hat.
Oh my god.
She hunted down the exact party hat. we found them on Amazon. They're like $3 for $3 or something like that, but it's the real party hat pattern that he has on his head.
That's beautiful.
We're just hoping the Bloody Gothic Rose 666 t-shirt shows up. Oh. So yeah, okay, so let's move on to our next letter. And I'll take the Chris Graham letter then. From Chris Graham, subject: podcast stuff. So, for the Vomit Hat Steve challenge, I think it's Visual Basic 6 book, but I don't know the name. Well, you're wrong, but we'll read the rest of your letter. Also, a question for the mailbag segment. With Tetris soon to join the list of terrible movies based on video games, will there ever be a movie based on a game that's actually good? Big name studios and directors have had decent success on comic book character adaptations lately, but that hasn't crossed over to the video game world. Are there any video game franchises that could be made into a good film with the right script and the right cast? And I have an answer for that. It's already happened. It's Resident Evil, the first one. The sequels not, are of mediocre quality, but the first Resident Evil film is good.
Yeah, I enjoyed the first one. In fact, I would say that's probably like I'm going to probably try and track that down and watch that now that it's Halloween season. Because, yeah, no, they did a decent job with that. Also, the I had another movie that really wasn't that bad, but I lost it.
I'm shocked that that there hasn't been an attempt on Metal Gear Solid yet. I mean, those games basically are a movie, but...
Well, there's been talk for years that yeah. they're working on it.
All right, so I pulled up the list on Wikipedia of films of theatrical films based on video games. Let's go down the list. Okay, Super Mario Brothers was mediocre. Okay, because it was barely. Double Dragon, I actually kind of perversely love because of Scott Wolf and Mark Dacascos as the two brothers, because it's called like long shot of Mark Dacascos like doing tons of awesome martial arts stuff, then Scott Wolf throws a basketball. Like, it's that bad. Anytime Scott Wolf punches a dude or kicks a dude, there's instantly a cut to the next shot, while any extended fight scene is Mark Dacascos, because, you know, he's the chairman. So, okay, Double Dragon was not a good movie in truth, but I love it. Street Fighter was pretty bad. Mortal Kombat, that was actually pretty good for a 90s action movie.
The first one, anyway.
Yeah, the first one was okay.
Yeah. Yeah, not Annihilation, but, I mean, which is also on the list, but Mortal Kombat, the first one was good. Okay, Wing Commander was kind of mediocre. Lara Croft Tomb Raider, I actually kind of liked that.
I haven't seen either of those.
Okay, so it doesn't hold... What it is that it's good for the era, but I wouldn't watch it again.
Okay.
Final Fantasy The Spirits Within, which is... would have been a much better film if it didn't have Final Fantasy on the name.
Yeah, like, I still think that's a pretty good sci-fi movie, but it has nothing to do with the franchise it's based on.
Resident Evil, of course, is a good one. Resident Evil's good. All right. Lara Croft Tomb Raider 2 is... meh. I mean, it falls into the category of the first one was mediocre. It was enjoyable, but I wouldn't call it good. House of the Dead.
Oh my god. Okay, any of these movies that Uwe Boll directed, a little fun thing that the aforementioned Ryan Tidball and I have done, watch those movies, but don't watch them with the regular audio. Just listen to the director's commentary. Dear god. Comedy gold mine right there.
Yeah. So then the second Resident Evil film, which is okay. It's, you know, I'll stop saying sequels. We'll just go for the first installation in the franchise. Alone in the Dark, which I forgot got made into a movie, so I don't remember if it was any good or not.
It's hilarious.
It got a 9 out of 100 for Metacritic.
Tell them to shut up. It's a hilarious movie. It's terrible, but it's awesomely
funny. It's got a 1% rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
There's this scene with all these people in a dark room, like, just shooting at nothing, and I had tears rolling down my cheeks. It was so poorly shot and poorly acted, and I just – it's very funny.
So the next on the list is Doom. Which
it had The Rock in it, and that redeemed it.
So the funniest thing is to watch that movie with my wife, who has, you know, her degree in biology and is working on her PhD studying viruses, because everything they say about DNA is pretty wrong in that film. If the best thing about being married to my wife is when we watch movies with bad, like, biology science, is her screaming, "It doesn't work that way," at the television. Okay, so Blood Rain.
I forgot that was a movie. That was another Bowl movie, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it was.
Bad. All right, so Silent Hill, which I
actually pretty good.
I've never seen Silent Hill. I've only seen the original movie that the game's based off of, Kindergarten Cop. Anyways, you think I'm joking?
No, it's true. They loved that.
The outfit of the main character is modeled after Schwarzenegger's costume in Kindergarten Cop. The school is modeled after the school in Kindergarten Cop with some direct signs being lifted and stuff. All right. Anyways.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, no. There's some really fun stuff on the internet if you look it up.
Well, I thought of one. It's not a movie, but there was the anime Gungrave, which is the most deep, philosophical and straight up tragic adaptation I've ever seen of an incredibly shallow video game that was an exercise in pushing square.
I think we have to avoid. I think we should stick with Western adaptations because if we want to include Japanese ones, oh my God, we've got to go back to so much stuff like. The Street Fighter stuff and, you know,
The Darkstalkers stuff. Yeah, good point.
All right, so, okay. DOA, Dead or Alive. That's really bad. Eric Roberts is in that.
There was a Tekken movie. That was bad.
Yeah. Well,
And I think I have the King of Fighters movie somewhere around here.
Postal. Uwe Boll. Skip that. Hitman, which was mediocre. In the Name of the King, a Dungeon Siege tale, which was Uwe Boll. Max Payne, which I never saw.
Awesome. It was nothing but Mark Wahlberg screaming and shooting at nothing. It like reached its peak glorious moment when there's a scene where he bursts into this room screaming and shooting, and there's nobody in the room. There's nobody in there.
Okay, so I wasn't going to do sequels, but Street Fighter, The Legend of Chun-Li.
Technically not a sequel, kind of a reboot.
Anybody see that?
It was terrible.
No, because it looked terrible.
Yeah, I didn't
see it. It was. Well, keep in mind, that came out around the same time Dragon Ball Evolution came out. So if you were going to see one terrible movie that year, it was Dragon Ball Evolution, let me tell you.
All right.
But if you're going to see two, yeah.
All right, moving on. Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time?
You mean we had a really great actor for it first, and then we're like, oh, wait, this needs more white people in ancient Middle East. Let's put Jake Gyllenhaal in it.
So, yeah, there's that. All right, so I guess there was a Heavenly Sword movie.
Really?
Yeah, it was a CGI cartoon.
Oh.
Made by Blockhead. It just came out in September.
Oh. I haven't heard anything about it.
Yeah. And that's pretty much, that's everything that's come out.
Huh.
No, wait. It's...
Honestly...
The new Hitman movie's coming out in February. Aren't we all excited?
Honestly, I think if you look at game, like a lot of current games, I mean, I know The Last of Us is going to be getting a movie adaptation. Halo is probably going to get one here eventually.
They've been talking about that for years, though.
Eventually, it will. I could see Mass Effect being a successful movie franchise.
Yeah.
Bioshock might.
Oh, I would love a Bioshock movie.
There's lots of games that could work. There's lots of games that have been optioned that they're working on actual films for. Like, there's a 2016 Metal Gear Solid film that's been licensed. Who knows?
See, I really think that would work. If they got the right cast for it, because Metal Gear Solid is supposed to be kind of cheesy, so.
But Mass Effect, they also are going to try to make a film out of that with a target date of 2018 or 2019. They're working on an Uncharted movie. There's going to be a Warcraft movie, which is interesting considering how much of the original Warcraft setup was based off of Warhammer. Lawsuits. There's going to be an Assassin's Creed movie in 2016. They're good. Someone's licensed the rights to make a movie off of Temple Run, and I can't even. They're going to reboot Tomb Raider. They're going to reboot Mortal Kombat, but there's also they want to turn The Last of Us into a movie, and then here's the kicker. In a film that is only looks logical to make because the Tetris movie is something that's happening, someone's licensed the rights to make a Minecraft movie.
Yeah, I believe it.
At least there is a gameplay element in Minecraft with, like, the creepers. Or that's lurkers, or whatever they are. I don't know. I don't play Minecraft. I just know that there's a mode of a thing with the blocks and the other things.
Oh, yes. My God.
We should move on, because...
Yeah. We should. We have a...
This is a long episode.
We got a doozy.
Yeah,
we
got a giant letter from Archimize here.
Hey, Archimize. So this is from Archimize, and he has a his subject is four-question Fortnite. Oh, boy. Hi, nerds and ties. Hope this Fortnite finds you well. A couple of fun questions for you tonight. Earlier this week, I was at a game developers conference called Meaningful Play, which champions games that go above and beyond entertainment. It was a great time, and it made me curious what games you might have played that you really connected with you. A game that you either learned something about yourself or some other lesson that you've taken with you wherever you go. I think we should just answer these one by one. First up, for this one, I actually do have an answer, and it was a game Archimize recommended to me. Spec Ops The Line. I'm really glad I played that game. It is not a game that I enjoyed in any way, shape, or form. But it was a very upsetting and heart-wrenching game that really made me think about shooters and, I guess, the value that we put on life and even what a game can be about. They kind of tried to take some themes from Heart of Darkness, and it worked distressingly well. There's parts of that game that will haunt me forever. It was good.
I would say for me, probably my favorite game series of all time, the Harvest Moon series. I played that when I was fairly young, and the whole point of that game is that you can play it straight through. You can basically play it in a way that you don't talk to anybody, you don't do anything, but you lose that. You lose a really good experience. It's a lot harder to get things done. By making friends with the villagers and whatnot, it's easier to get your tasks done. It's easier to raise a family and whatnot. And that really instilled in me that sense of, like, you know what? No one is an island, and it's important to have a support group. And I feel like that's what the Harvest Moon series taught me, and that's kind of stuck with me pretty much my entire life.
For me, it's the ending of Vandal Hearts made me cry. When Ash disappears, there's the after credits sequence that made it better, but, like, they just did this heartbreaking ending to that game. Oof. And it's a game that, like, nobody's ever played. Like, have you ever played Vandal Hearts, either of you?
I've never played it.
Yeah, it's a PlayStation 1 tactical RPG. It came out right around the same time as Final Fantasy Tactics, so it didn't get anywhere near as much press. It's not as long a game. Like, you can beat it in, like, 13 hours. But it's really good.
I wonder if it's on PSN. I mean, if it is, maybe
I have no idea.
I'll have to check.
Yeah, I'm just angry that I can't find any of my PlayStation 1 memory cards, because then I could just pop it into my old PS2 and play it again. But, yeah.
All right, so next question.
If you know where my PlayStation 1 memory cards went.
It is on the PlayStation Network.
Excellent.
Yeah, the second one is not so good, but the first one's good.
I'm sorry, it is not. The prequel, Vandal Hearts Flames of Judgment.
I've never played that. I have no idea if that's any
good.
Not
as excited.
Well, is it a prequel to the first game? Because Vandal Hearts 2 had no plot relation. It was like a Final Fantasy thing where, like, it didn't have any plot relation to the first game.
I don't know. It just says it's just a prequel.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So, next question on the Archimize docket. Also, while I was at Meaningful Play, they were filming Batman v Superman, the thrilling courtroom drama where the jury has the difficult task of sentencing a man to death while Batman poorly hides in the back of the room. I love that image. They were filming at the Broad Art Museum. the big glass sandcrawler looking building. And apparently LexCorp SUVs have been driving around all week. My question to all of you is this: what do you think they were filming? Did Clark go to see a Spartan football game? Was Batman getting a guided tour in costume? Was Lex Luthor rolling around on a Segway? Or was the Broad Museum an actual spaceship, just like we all suspect? I encourage wild speculation.
What they were actually filming was a slap fight between Bruce Wayne and Lex Luthor as they had an argument over who's going to buy every piece of art in the museum.
I really hate it when they I'm sure it's just something ridiculously simple like LexCorp headquarters or something dumb like that, because I really hate this when they repurpose really, really notable architectural landmarks in films as other things, like in Transformers 3, and there are many things wrong with Transformers 3.
But like the Milwaukee Art Museum
is heavily featured in Transformers 3 as like the corporate office, but like it's on the postcards. Like that entire building is like one of the most biggest landmarks on the thing. Like when you watch the news in the morning, like the video before it like has like the things unfolding on the art museum in fast sequence, like, so it really just pulls me out of the reality of the film just immediately, you know?
Yeah, for no sure, I know exactly sure. How you feel.
Yeah, so It's going to be like LexCorp headquarters or the Department of Science at LexCorp's Monumental University.
It's
probably.
It's when they're going to reveal that this is actually related to the Smallville universe, and Lex is going to call up Clark at some weird hour of the day and know exactly what he's doing and want to hang out. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. That would be too cool. I would love that.
Oh, dear.
All right, next question. On a related note, I heard a rumor that a female Robin was going to be in Batman v Superman, the thrilling courtroom drama where blah, blah, blah. Do you think DC will finally acknowledge the existence of Stephanie Brown, or will it more likely be Carrie Kelly?
Carrie Kelly's the rumor. I think I'm going to pull up the Batman v Superman Robin. Because that's, Jenna Malone, is the rumored actress for, Carrie Kelly.
Well, it seems like they've been drawing a lot of stuff from Dark Knight Returns.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because I think it's really implied that that's the version, like, a version of her that we're going to get. See, the problem is I'm having a hard time remembering who this actress is off the top of my head.
She was in Sucker Punch.
I did not watch that.
Neither did I, but...
Because it looked awful. And then I read the plot, and I was like, that looks awful. She was young Ellie in Contact. I've seen that. She was in Donnie Darko.
Huh.
She was Gretchen in Donnie Darko. She was in Saved. But, yeah. Okay, so I've seen stuff she's in. She's not bad.
This must be the first version of the DC Universe where Dark Knight Returns happens before the Justice League is formed.
Yeah.
Also, once again, if they really are drawing from Dark Knight Returns, I still need to ask, what are Batman and Superman going to fight over? Because in that, it was that Superman was the authority figure and Batman was the symbol of fascism and how it totally works. So
wait, I'm confused.
In Dark Knight Returns.
I just realized how stupid Frank Miller was. Like
just now?
Think about it. How do you have fascism versus an authority figure?
Well, he's not
think
the
about
right
it.
Figure. He's answering to the man, and Batman only answers to himself because Batman's always right.
But the entire premise of Dark Knight Returns is which fascism is better,
Ronald Reagan or Batman? Yeah.
I think it never occurred to me how stupid Dark Knight Returns is. Because it's venerated as this great graphic novel, and I've read it, and I loved it, and, you know, But I haven't read DKR in like probably 14 years was the last time I read it. Because I reread it right before Dark Knight Returns 2 came out. Like the second...
The animated one.
Hmm?
The animated movie, right?
No. Frank Miller did a sequel to Dark Knight Returns.
I thought you were talking about like the animated... Because they did that animated version of the comic a couple of years ago. That was really good.
No, like I said, it was like 14 years ago. When DKR 2 came out. That's when I think I reread it right before then. And DKR 2 is nowhere near as good as the original Dark Knight Returns. But, wow. I can't believe I didn't realize how stupid the entire premise of that book is.
Batman's fascism is better than other people's fascism.
That's the moral of the story, is our fascist is better than that fascist.
Yep.
Wow. That is blowing my mind.
What do we got for the next question from Arkhamize, though, while Trey has this revelation?
So, related to Batman, lastly, do you think any of the child actors who played baby Bruce Wayne, seeing his parents being murdered, grew up to be Batman themselves? Like, do you mean, like, do you think any of them will actually play Batman? Or do you think that, like, the kid on Gotham is just going to snap someday and just go around at night beating people up?
Who was the kid in 1989 Batman? Who was the kid in the Michael Keaton movie?
Because
that kid's be about my age now, which is about the right age for Batman.
Let's find out to the internet.
Thanks to the new 52, I'm older than Batman, which is really irritating because I was going to enjoy being younger than Batman for like a year or two more.
But Batman still has a son
who
is 10.
Charles,
even though he's been Batman for 5 years.
I
think they've retconned it so he's been Batman for more than 5 years now. It's just that he hasn't been openly like to the public as Batman.
The 1989 Batman young child was played by one Mr. Charles Roskelly.
What's he doing now?
No idea, because that was the only thing that he's ever been in.
He works at the Burger King.
It could be someone like Neil. You know, it's who was in 1994's I Love Trouble as Ranger Scout number 2, who is a friend of ours. His real name is Matt Lindvig. He's a former con director for No Brand Con, but that's his only IMD entry, is a kid leering at Julia Roberts. So it's really funny to like go back and watch that scene, because it's like, if you know the guy, like I was looking at this crowd of like Ranger Scouts and like I can't tell which one's supposed to be. Oh no, there he is. The one with the creepiest face.
But yeah, I don't know. Kid on Gotham will go around at night and beat people up.
The only reason why the kid from the 1989 Batman movie dropped off the mat is because he put on a black mask and has become a vigilante in the night.
That's true. We have no reason to believe
that. We have no reason not to believe that's the truth. What's this kid's name again?
Charles Roskelly.
Charles Roskelly is the dark defender of New York City. I'm just saying it. I have nothing to prove that this isn't happening right now.
Hell, for all we know, the kid from Batman Begins probably is in Nanda Parbat right now learning how to be an assassin.
It's true.
I heard that's true.
I heard that on the internet. And then,
Yeah,
just now.
Must be true.
From you. Okay. So
that's a good source.
So is that the end of Arkhamize's letter?
That should do it for this week. Catch you later, Space Cowboys, Arkhamize.
Okay.
Now we have it.
This is like going to be like one of our longest episodes ever. Going into the Vomit Hat Steve Challenge really quickly. Nobody got it right. We're going to retire this book. The person who guessed it was a Visual Basic book, you were way off, because it's from Microsoft Quick Basic 4.0, not Visual Basic. Quick Basic 4.0, or as you know, the free version of Quick Basic as QBasic. Oh, yeah. Specifically, it was from Programming in Basic Selected Topics, Quick Basic 4.0. So, yeah. Now, for those of you who don't know, what the Hall of Awesome is that every episode I read a random pages off of a book, and you have to write in and guess what they are. Pretty simple, right?
Yeah, seems right.
Well, you're wrong. Well, anyways, if you write in and guess the name of the book right, we will read your name in the Hall of Awesome and say you are awesome every episode, unto forward. And the current people in the Hall of Awesome are Archimize, Zero, Rena Innocenti, Cheesy McDamu, Krista, Slithery D, Shameless Otaku, The Random Ramblings Man, and Corfan. And now it's time for our random book, which I have not picked ahead of time, so I'm grabbing this book off my bookshelf. I don't know if I've actually read this one before or not. Since 1950, the world's population has doubled, and 85% of that growth has occurred in the third world, where today's population growth rates are unprecedented. Because of the fastest rates of growth are in many rainforested countries, Brazil, the Philippines, Indonesia, Guatemala, we cannot hope to protect rainforests without asking, what set off this population explosion? If you know what book that is from, go to nerdandtie.com and click on the contact form and tell us, and you can be added to the Hall of Awesome. Or if you have anything else you'd like to write into us and tell us how great we are, where our pants are, and what you had for breakfast, and what you think Batman had for breakfast.
Do that too. We'd love to hear from you. And we'll not even read your letter on the air. Well, gentlemen, it's been a very, very busy fortnight, and it's probably going to be a very, very busy fortnight next time. When we meet up again in another 2 weeks. Until then, I'm First Stirs.
I'm Trey Dorn.
And I'm Nick Izumi.
Have a wonderful fortnight, everyone. We'll see you in a couple weeks.
On Stitcher, using Stitcher.com, and go use the Stitcher app on iOS and Android, and use the subscribing to us on the iTunes Store and rate and review us.
Do that.
Pants!
Bye!